Hi everyone, I'm Stuart Gandalf. Welcome to our meeting. We're going to get started now because we have a lot to talk about today and I'm excited about it. And apparently my new computer has alerts going off every 30 seconds. I don't know what that is. I'll try to turn that off when Rob starts talking. I have one of the new iMacs, which is very pretty, but is sending ex at exactly the wrong time a lot of alerts. Anyway, so as we have our regular webinar series, we do webinars about once every 3 or 4 weeks. Many of you probably follow our series. As you know, usually either I or my team are doing most of the talking. Today, I have the pleasure of having a guest star to the meeting. And so I'll be the sidekick today. Rob's going to be leading most of it. I'll be adding a lot of color commentary. I first met Rob Klein at Shizmid. I don't know, years ago. And Rob and I are like, we're born within a couple days of each other, and we look at the world pretty much the same, which is confusing and a little scary. But Rob is very, very insightful. Rob is one of the leading researchers in healthcare. And like I said, I became friends with Rob. Rob and I actually both have houses in Palm Springs. And so we're both mid-century modern fans, music fans, and healthcare marketing fans. So I think you'll find Rob is a very insightful expert in our category and in our field. So Rob, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thanks, Stuart, and thanks for having me on this morning. I really appreciate the opportunity. I'm so excited to share some insights that we've learned in our study. So, as Stuart said, I am CEO of Klein & Partners. We are a national healthcare market research firm. We work with hospitals and health systems of all shapes and sizes around the country, really helping them to optimize their brand's voice.
Very good. And by the way, yes, Natanya's right. I meant to say that. So Natanya, we switched our webinar time. Today is at this moment is 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll be finishing at 11, what we said earlier. So, okay, not a 2-hour webinar, I promise. I'd love to, but I think we'd all be tired. Rob, you want to just get started?
Absolutely. Let's get started. And also, I'm actually doubly excited to be here today. I just wanted to apologize up front to everyone. I just had nose surgery, so I've still got the stitches in them. I may be having to move off camera to sneeze or something, so I apologize, but I wasn't going to miss today for anything. Even nose surgery couldn't get me down.
You're the man.
And yes, I look the same. So it was purely for a deviated septum. I'm this is as good as I'm going to look. So I
That's what they all say, Rob.
know. All right, let's jump in. First of all, let me just give a quick background on the methodology of the research, and then we'll jump into all the cool findings. So this is a national study I do every year. I call it my NCIS study because it's got to have a pithy, cool name, of course. And so we talked to 1,000 consumers, heads of household around the country, fielded it last summer, and we just asked them a series of questions. I kind of jokingly call it my kitchen sink survey. So a lot of times I'll just ask friends like Stuart, what are some of the hot topics this year that we should include in our study? In fact, I'm getting ready to do my next one in another month or so. So that's really kind of the impetus. I've been doing this for like 12 or 15 years. So there's a lot of questions we've asked over the years. And anywhere that you see arrows or letters, that indicates a statistically significant difference. I'll note that when we get to it, but I just want to let you know. Also, at the bottom of every chart is the actual question wording. So I'm going to take it chapter by chapter. Let's start off with what I call COVID brain. Now, I don't mean that clinically, but what we have found is that COVID brain is real. It's impacting people's memory, their attention span, their patience, and their brand linkage. And so I think we've all had moments where we just can't remember things. I think we call it CRS, and we'll go to a store and like, oh, I forgot this. I forgot to lock the door. We are really struggling with remembering things. Our attention span, we aren't paying attention to things as much as we used to. Our patients, unfortunately, that is playing out in too many ERs and in too many flights where people, we've just all of a sudden social graces have just gone away. And that makes it hard to deliver an exceptional experience because our staff, especially nurses, are frustrated. They're exhausted. Patients are coming in loaded for bear. It's a bad recipe. And then brand linkage. As marketers, really, people aren't paying as much attention to our ads as they did in the past. So we've really got to make sure that the advertising we do, that the brand is the star. And so, as healthcare marketers, our mantra must be, as we're developing any type of communication, whether it's a TV ad, whether it's a digital ad, whether it's our website, that our messaging must be simple, engaging, repetitive, and the brand must be the star. GEICO is the king at this type of advertising because people aren't paying attention to insurance ads. And so GEICO has done a really good job of having a simple message. It's definitely repetitive. They've been doing 15%. Look at even the billboard says, need I say more? We're to the point now we can complete that for them because they've just drilled it into our brains. And it's engaging or catchy. I'm not saying, advertising in healthcare needs to be catchy or kitsch and have a brand character like they can do in insurance. But our messages are so complicated. I've had clients say, oh, there's white space on this print ad. Let's throw in another message, or let's fill up all the space on our computer screen for our website. White space is not the enemy. We need more of it. We need less is more in today's consumer's clogged mind. Remember, our brains are like CPUs and they're overheating. And so we have, as marketers, we have to make things easier for them to remember. So make sure your brand is the star. Don't do a TV ad and the brand comes at the last second. In 3 to 4 seconds, you've lost them. So your brand has to be the star, whether it's a print ad. Don't make the logo little. Make it large. Be proud of who you are. Make sure they connect the message with who's delivering the message. Absolutely, the most important thing we can take away probably from this study is we have to change the way we communicate with people.
I would just add that, it's always been important to be timely, but I don't know, I remember back in high school reading Alvin Toffler's Future Shock, which was about the pace of change is going to become overwhelming for people eventually. And that's kind of where we are today. And so now you have AI and all these things competing for your attention. And so it's just the idea of being very clear, very fast is more important than ever. And our data shows it. And I know, Rob, you have a whole special product to evaluate websites. But when we're looking at our clients' websites, you've got 2 or 3 seconds to engage them or they bounce. And so, like, it just has to be. And this was, a decade ago, it was 6 seconds. It's a never-ending journey to trying to be as clear and as fast and as precise as possible, even more now these.
Well, and Stuart, it's interesting. Remember, and we'll both show our age. Remember when we had the MTV generation that people said, oh, the MTV is making all these fast videos. And so people are only going to spend a couple of minutes and it's ruining traditional messaging. Well, now that's a lifetime. Now we have the Instagram generation where in 2 to 3 minutes, I can flip through 100 videos. I wonder if Instagram is actually creating ADHD,
Yeah,
as because I know I love Instagram and I've got ADHD and it fits what I want. I want 10, 15 seconds of something fun and then I move on, but it never ends and there's no end to it. So I really wonder what how we're are we changing brains or have brains changed and we're adapting to them? That's the quandary.
Yep.
So we also asked, what kind of ads do you want? Do you want ads that appeal to the brain or to the heart? And this has been the case forever. People want to emotionally connect with a brand. Most people want a relationship, not a transaction. And so advertising that appeals to their emotion, in fact, I do a lot of ad testing. The ads that score the best in my database all have one thing in common. They connect at the emotional heart level, not the what I call the attribute gutter. We're bigger, faster, better. We've won all these awards. We've done this. We're bigger. We have more locations. It's the we bragging, and nobody wants to hear that. Advertising has to be in acknowledging people's challenges and then subtly how your brand is the solution for those challenges. We've kind of gotten away from that in a lot of cases where we're so bragging about how great we are. And it's like if you have to tell people you're funny, you're probably not. If you have to brag about how good you are or how trustworthy you are, consumers are like, no, I'll tell you if you're that or not. Don't you tell me. And so appealing on an emotional level. And I'll tell you too, the thing that consumers want most is they want a brand that is authentic or genuine. That's why people are buying Toms or Bombas socks and those, that you have a, you have something that's bigger than you, that that's important to you as a, in your brand's DNA.
Very good.
All right, so let's talk another topic here. Let's talk how Americans are feeling. We're not feeling so great post-COVID. You know, I, one of my, if you, as you get to know me, I've got my Robisms and Stuart's heard them all. But one of my newer ones is time is the new currency. COVID has stolen 2 years of our lives that we'll never get back. You can always make more money, but you can't make more time. What's the one thing we do a lot of in healthcare over the past, you know, 100 years? We take people's time because we build things around us. Oh, come in early and then you sit for half an hour because the doctor's running behind. Those are the most dreaded words at a doctor's office. The doctor is running behind. You know, it's like a broken record. And consumers are not going to put up with that anymore. So us managing their time is absolutely paramount now because they have a lot of choices. The days of us competing against other competitors that are like us are coming to an end. Our biggest competition is from the disruptors. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But you can see most people, they feel their physical and mental health is just kind of, it's just kind of good, which is like a C. That's just average. We have a mental health crisis in this country that we have to address. In my brand trackers, when we ask about care settings they've visited in the past year, mental health visits are approaching 20%. It was like nothing several years ago. So that is skyrocketing. Just like virtual visits went from low single digits up into the 20s now, the same thing is happening with mental health visits. And they can be virtual as well. Disruptors are happening in that category as well. So let's talk about attitudes and health. So we asked people to agree or disagree with several statements. So the first one, when it comes to my health, I rarely plan ahead. I tend to put my healthcare needs last above my family, even though I know I should take better care of myself. And oftentimes that is the household CEO, which is the female, the mom, the wife. Women put themselves last far too often, but when they come in for a healthcare visit, they mean it and they want to be taken seriously. They want to feel rushed. They want their time to say, this is what's going on. Listen to me. Don't make me feel rushed. So how we create experiences in healthcare absolutely varies, not only by age, but also by sex. It'd be a major hassle for me to have to switch to another healthcare provider. That's the challenge why a lot of switching doesn't happen, because people are just like, you know what? This was a hassle. I don't want to go through this again. No one goes home and says, ooh, I get to pick a new doctor today. Those words are never said. That's not something we look forward to. So once they pick, people put up with a lot. But I'm going to show you that's starting to change. Plus, they don't even know how to judge who's the best. We don't do a good job of telling them why we're better. Our websites need to function much better as a sales tool than they do. We brag in our websites. I had a client say, oh, we have over 70,000 pages of information. And I went, and you're proud of that? I bet you 69,950 don't ever get looked at. So we are overwhelming people with BS that they don't want to hear or read. Advertising helps me learn 50%. I'm very comfortable searching online. So advertising still is something, especially younger people are very open to all forms of advertising, especially digitally. So advertising still is an important medium. What, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, advertising never, I never listen to advertising. Yet they'll spit back what we've just told them in the ads. So whether people admit it or not, advertising is as effective in setting the tone of your brand as it's always been. I trust, most people still trust their healthcare provider to keep their information secure, but 4 in 10 said, yeah, I'm hearing a lot lately about all these data breaches. We're going to reach a tipping point where they just don't, they don't trust us. Of course, is there going to come a point when they're like, you know what? Everybody's information was stolen. Why care anymore? You know, I really wonder where that tipping point is going to happen. 73% agreed how a hospital or system treats its employees has the biggest impact. People know how you're treating your employees because they will mention it, whether they think anyone's hearing them or they think that they're out of earshot. Remember, other work I've done too, when someone's in a hospital bed, they may be sick, but their hearing becomes superhuman. They can hear a pin drop because they have nothing else to do. So they can hear staff members talking out in the hall when staff members don't think they can be heard. 46% also think that you're more focused on making money than taking care of patients. That's the challenge we're facing. We are up against real for-profit brands like pharmaceuticals, durable medical equipment, health insurers. They think that we're for-profit too, even though the vast majority of us aren't. Years ago, I asked people, what profit margin do you think hospitals make? The average was 30%. Now pick your jaw off the ground, because we know a 2 or 3% profit margin is woohoo time. But the problem is consumers think we make a ton of money. That's a real tough message to try to counteract, because we're stuck with all the others that have no problem making a lot of money and talking. Yeah,
Bob, that's a really ironic thing that we talk a lot about with other healthcare leaders, which is the particularly the big hospital systems where they're losing $1 billion this year.
Absolutely.
The perception that, man, you guys are making a lot of money off of COVID is, you know, unfortunately just woefully, you know, off base. And it's a challenge. And it's like hard to say, what are you going to do? Run ads saying, we don't make as much money as you thought we did.
Don't worry,
we're losing $1 billion. We're here for you. It's a tough challenge.
It is. And I agree. I do not have a magic bullet answer for you. It's how do you combat when people are absolutely wrong, but they are convinced that they're right?
Yeah, particularly
no brand ever won by telling its constituents they're wrong. You know what I mean? You just don't.
Especially now, right? People have their own set of facts. It's just kind of.
You're almost better off admitting a fault that you don't have and then saying, here's what we're doing to correct it. Sometimes the mea culpa, even though you didn't do anything wrong, but that's a discussion for a bigger discussion for another time.
Sounds like a dinner discussion.
Yeah, exactly. Or over drinks, unfortunately. So, you know, it's important to me to get all the my care from one well-organized and coordinated system. 74%. Let me tell you, I've been in this game a long time. Back in the mid 90s, I was doing system research nationally, and the two top things people wanted for a system back then to have value to them, I want a single bill and I want the left hand to know what the right hand's doing. We haven't figured either of those out 25, 30 years later. So that's a challenge. And we're gonna talk a bit more about the whole billing thing, because that's a problem in and of itself. But they want us. You know, we've spent 30 years saying, hey, we're a system, you can get everything in one place. And yet the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. And so that's on us to truly act like a system. When they, no matter how they or where or when or with whom they connect with us, it should be a single type of visit. Everyone should know they're coming and everybody should be coordinated. Half the folks want like this local. As mergers happen, M&A is just crazy right now. We are becoming an oligopolistic industry, just like banking and airlines. We're not there yet, but it's happening very quickly. The bigger we get, the harder it is for us to act local and to really have that personalized care. A lot of national brands are really struggling right now with how people are perceiving them. And only half think that medical information is written in a consumer friendly. That means half don't think it is. There's still opportunities for us to speak to them in language that they understand, not try to wow them with all the syllables in the words that we use. One of the things when I'm doing website consulting, the first thing I do, I go on their website and I type in for find a doc, I'll type in foot doctor. And then it's amazing how many times it comes up nothing. I know that's simple and kind of silly, but it's my go-to to see how bad their wording is. And then I'll type in, you know, podiatrist, and then it pops up. So it's little things like that, that we don't speak how consumers speak. And our website is as much a sales tool as anything else.
By the way, Rob, one thing that just jumped off that page was, it's important for me to get my care from one well-organized, coordinated health system, primary care, urgent care. And that's a huge issue of healthcare consumerism. And I have a doctor that I left recently, not because I didn't like him or didn't think he was great. It's because his system had horrible urgent cares and didn't have everything was in the wrong side of town and it wasn't all together. And meanwhile, the competitive system is like that. And that really matters. And I still sometimes wonder if I made the right decision there because I really liked him. But the convenience today is so important. And that's you can see where healthcare consumerism matters, where people have those higher expectations today than they used to. Nobody would even think of that as an option, right? Like, well, of course you have this litany of disorganized individuals, but that's a big number. Three quarters want that, have no understand that enough to want that is a big deal, I think.
So let's talk about trust. Trust is not great in healthcare. Right now, on a 0 to 10 scale, it's even with scale creep that we see a lot with these 0 to 10 scales, like in customer sat, this is really pretty low. And you can see we asked them across all of these different types of organizations in healthcare. In fact, for most of them, it's down from 2022. So you can see the only ones that are even in the kind of the okay range are children's hospitals and physicians. And all of the disruptors, Apple, Walmart, look at who's at the bottom. They're always at the bottom. Pharmaceutical companies. They just don't seem to care. They keep raking in all the cash. US News and World Report is not that trustworthy. There's a lot going on with US News. My big prediction is I'll go on a limb. I think in 5 to 7 years, they won't even be around. They are really, really struggling. They're making a lot of changes and they're reacting to everything. Heck, they're getting sued by the San Francisco DA for their methodology. So there's a lot going on. People are pulling out, and I think we're going to see a big change there. And I'll show you what really is replacing them in a minute. Disruptors. So not we're going to send you the deck. I think somebody had that in the Q&A. We'll send the deck out, but these are disruptors we tested with consumers about their interest. And so about 1 in 5 said, yeah, I would absolutely use that. And the top ones are COVID has taught us that you can get everything delivered to home. So why not healthcare? So why can't I have hospital care at home? You just get sick in a hospital. How about urgent care at home? Look at Dispatch Health. And then I want chronic care management at home. We've got a client that's got a NASA-like command center at their facility, and they can monitor their patients worldwide. It's unbelievable. I mean, it really looks like a command center at NASA. And it is so amazing what they're able to monitor with their patients wherever they go in the world. So technology and AI, if used properly, is really changing our world. And COVID really was the catalyst for all the bad things it did. It's forcing us to change the way we deliver care. The last thing I want to do is spend $500 million to build a big brand new hospital, unless you've got a 100-year-old hospital that's falling apart. But for the most part, I want to spend my money on bringing care to people, whether it's more urgent care locations or freestanding ERs or virtual type visits or home care, having things delivered to home. That's where we're heading in our world. And that's where people want, that's the type of care that they want. Most people don't need a hospital because most, two-thirds of the folks never, they just are fortunately healthy enough, they never need to go to a hospital unless we make them go in for an outpatient type treatment that they could have gotten at an outpatient center. But we really need to change the way we have to innovate. We're being disrupted by all these different organizations coming in. And I'll tell you, Amazon's not going to give up. They may be learning hundreds of ways how not to do healthcare, but they've got more money than most countries, and they're not going to give up till they figure it out. CVS CEO just came out at last year and said, we want to own the entire patient journey. Just a few years ago, they said, we just want to own primary care and urgent care. That was a scary enough shot across the bow. Now they want to own the entire patient journey. 5 years ago, I'd never make this statement. I'll make it now. I would not be shocked to someday see a CVS hospital or a CVS physician network, urgent care centers. I could see an Amazon hospital. I could see Amazon doctors. that's heresy a few years ago. But things are changing. We have awakened in a new world now. And what was incomprehensible 5 years ago is absolutely plausible in the future. I mean, I know we got, I'm going to skip a couple of those slides. Let me get to this next one. I've always been talking with clients that we have spent so much time in a siloed, each service line has to be its own P&L. And that's not how other organizations think. You know, I was lucky enough in a prior, before I started my company, I worked for a large research firm and one of our biggest clients was P&G. So I spent a lot of time down in Cincinnati working with that organization and how they look at things and how they look at lifetime customer value. And we don't really think those ways in healthcare. I'm able to show here that if a woman has an exceptional maternity experience, she is very likely to want to pick a pediatrician for her child within the same system, bring their child to the hospital within that system. And then if she or her husband or partner gets sick later on, you have right of first refusal for that care. So the halo effect on maternity is huge. So when clients say to me, you know, we really don't make any money on maternity, my answer is, who cares? Stop looking at it as an isolated, siloed P&L, and maybe it's a loss leader. Retailers 100 years ago figured out loss leaders and cross-selling. Those are not dirty terms. Those are terms we need to be looking at. If OB can become a loss leader for 30 years of future revenue, then that's huge. And you can cross-sell other types of services. So we've got to start taking a more holistic approach to how we present our service lines. They don't work in isolation. They can work together. We've just separated them, and that's our own doing. No one's made us do that. All right, let's get down to primary care, the top of the sales funnel. That's where most of the interactions happen with our healthcare systems, especially with a lot of our pediatric clients. We're able to show them that 80% of their parents have basically all healthy children. They don't need serious acute or chronic care management. So if all the business you're getting as a pediatric hospital is all the serious stuff, you're very much in a passive reaction type of strategy. You're more B2B than B2C. So working your way up the sales funnel for more of the primary care, that's when you take more control of your share of wallet and your future growth. So, you know, 88% of adults have a primary care provider. We also changed it this year where we, instead of saying primary care physician, we said provider, and we said that can mean anybody. It doesn't have to be a doctor. So when we asked them who that provider is, 18% said my primary care provider is a PA or a nurse practitioner. More than ever, consumers are open to not seeing a doctor, especially Gen Z. They're not enamored with the lab coat. So they are more about access and convenience and service. And if it's an NP or a PA, I don't care. That doesn't mean anything to me at all. So that's an opportunity for us as we all suffer with access challenges. We have to look at ways, how do we get people in, even if they can't see their own doctor? They are willing to see another type of care provider or go to another office. It's all about us providing solutions as opposed to excuses. And you can see having a PCP increases by age. Only 70% of Gen Z say they have a primary care provider. In fact, a lot of times when I'm doing qualitative, they're like, who's your PCP? They're like, right here. And they show their phone. So that's a big change too, is with digital. Think about it. If I'm sick, I can search my symptoms online on my phone. I can schedule an appointment on my phone. I can have that appointment on my phone. I can get follow-up instructions on my phone and order RX and have it sent to me. And I can pay my bill on my phone. I literally can go through the entire journey of sick care, stem to stern, and I've never put my phone down. I mean, that's just amazing. Are we set up to be with them throughout that journey, or do we come in and out and other players come in? What services? Yeah, annual physicals. More and more people want physicals because COVID's taught us, I'm afraid to get sick. I bet everybody on this call has had a time when you've got a cold, what's the first thing you say? Honey, where's the COVID kit? We assume that when we get a sniffle, it's got to be COVID. We've just, our brains have gotten conditioned that way. It's a little, you know, crazy, but we're all just paranoid about COVID when there's so many other things that can happen to us. We still get flu and other illnesses outside of COVID, but we immediately think, take a COVID test. So annual physicals are becoming more and more important. It's also one of the frustrating things people are saying, I can't get in to get a physical, or I can't get in for a follow-up visit because of access. So then we ask them to agree or disagree with statements about their relationship with their PCP. And Stuart, if you could check the Q&A for me to keep up with that. I saw another one came in. I don't want to derail, but if there's something interesting, just interrupt me. So let's go to the bottom here. There isn't a lot of good objective information out there to help me choose a physician. 43% are like, our find a doc pages on our website. That's where a lot of people will go. We've got to make that easy for them. It's not just about giving facts. They want to get to know the physician. Most people choose a doctor based on, are they in the network? Are they close by? And are they accepting new patients? Those are all market factors. There's no brand factor there. There's no, do I like this physician? Will I want to go to them? All that's missing. That's why choosing a physician has a huge level of cognitive dissonance in it. People are like, I'm not sure I chose the right doctor until I get sick and I go see him, and then it's too late. So what can we do for that person to get to know the physician as a human being? Part of that is having the doctor write their intro, having the doctor do a video. If the doctor's funny, then tell jokes. If they're not funny, don't make them try to be funny. If they have a sport they love, talk about that. People want to get to know the doctor as a human being and what their bedside manner is going to be like. And we are just so based on, they've had this many years experience. Look at the credentials they have. People are like, yeah. They all are good. Especially Gen Z, they expect clinical competence. They are making decisions based on service and access and bedside manner. I don't feel as loyal to my doctor as I have in the past, 29%. So here's where that vulnerability comes in I was talking about earlier. Look at the last one. This should be the one that we pay the most attention to. 23% said, service at my doctor's office has gotten so bad that I'm considering changing physicians. That was 10% just 6 years ago before COVID. So people are no longer, can the doctor say, well, they love me so much, they put up with all the junk in my office, and that's not my job anyway. Well, yeah, it is. You're the captain of your ship. People think the office is an extension of you as a physician. And so we have got to make that office experience better from beginning to end. And again, experience work that I've done, we'll talk about it a little bit here, but people are mad before they even see the doctor because they've had so many barriers just to sit on that table and wait for the doctor. So by the time they see the doctor, they're already seeing red. Information sources. So help, family and friends, especially for boomers, is still the number one source, but look at online search with Google, online reviews from other patients, especially millennials and Gen X. Look where US News is, way at the bottom. So people want to look at what other people like them have to say about the doctor or the hospital or whoever in healthcare. The days of that expert independent brand being the be-all end-all has really declined for most people. In fact, let's talk about that. So online ratings, people want at least 4 stars, and that's up from a year ago. And more people are saying stars play a role in the decision-making. So if we ask them, if you were picking a hospital now, are you more likely to look at consumer-driven reviews or quality organizations like a US News? And you can see it's much higher. 39% said, I want the consumer driven. In fact, they're just as likely to say neither as they are US News. So do you want to reach Gen Z to Gen X along with Hispanics and parents? Consumer driven is even higher for them. And which is more important? You know, it's either reviews or it's both, because they want to read what people have to say. Anybody can click a star and then move on. But if you take the time to talk about your experience, that's where people really learn. That's why, like, gosh, when you're on Amazon, they're like, read all our reviews, what people have to say. Those are infinitely more useful than just looking at, we have 4,000 five-star reviews. Okay. Here's the other kicker that's interesting. In the lower right, we asked them, how many ratings and reviews do you want? You know, it's around 500. When I asked this question 10, 12 years ago, people were like, you know, I'd be happy if they had 15 to 20 reviews. It just shows you how quickly our expectations have changed, because everybody's talking about the thousands of reviews that they have. So we have to keep up with the Joneses. So it's not just having good reviews, it's having a lot of them, because they're like, if you don't have a lot of reviews, what are you hiding? So we are being compared to the Amazons of the world that have thousands and thousands of ratings. So it's as much a quantity game as it is a quality game. Now let's talk about primary care access. The majority of folks said, I've had problems, at least a little bit, getting access. And the biggest access issues they've had is getting in for an annual physical or a follow-up visit, like I just mentioned earlier. So access is probably the most important category problem, not just brand problem, but everybody is struggling with. And I know we're struggling hiring doctors. We can't keep staff. I get it. We're in a financial crisis. We've got to get creative with our solutions. If we can't hire more doctors, then can we use CRM to get to know our patients better and say, you know, Rob, Dr. Smith can't see you for a week, but we know where you live and we know Dr. Jones is only a mile away. Dr. Jones can see you today, or the nurse practitioner or the PA can see you today, or would you rather wait for a week to see your Dr. Smith? Instead of saying, hey, Dr. Smith is busy, you know, like it or lump it, we can offer a solution. It may not be perfect, but at least what it's telling people is, we are trying to get you in. Does this work? Now you've put the choice back in their mind. And then when they make that choice, they've had a choice and they feel better about that choice, as opposed to being mad that the doctor can't see them. So it's about providing solutions is what consumers are looking for us to do. So we've got to get creative in our solutions. This is just saying, how long was this appointment? How many days did it take? How many should it have taken? If you look across the top in the red, most, other than urgent care, which you always get in immediately, that's the whole point of it. Everybody waited longer than they felt they should have, by, you know, upwards of a week or almost 2 weeks. So we are making people wait, and they're getting tired of that. They're like, you know what? There's an alternative here. I don't have to stay with you. I can find somewhere else that can get me in faster. So it behooves us to keep our patients by getting them in, by offering solutions. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, people are open to seeing a nurse practitioner or a PA. They might need but they want it in the same office. If you think about it, if I can't see my doctor, at least I'm in my familiar office that I know how to get to. If I have to go to another office, then you need to do a good job telling me where that office is so I don't get lost. So it's about having a really good handoff to them. Big section here. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. There's more detail in the full report, but we did a little primary care journey mapping. And in fact, I'm going to skip. Let me go to this one. So what we did is we divvied up all the different stages of a primary care visit, from calling, scheduling, arriving, things like that, you know, the waiting room, the exam room, all the way through. And then for each one, we said, does this part, this touch point, we didn't use that word, but I'm using it with you. You know, did this touch point, were there any problems there that you feel need improving? And if they said yes, then we're like, okay, we had a list that I've put together over the years doing a lot of this work. And we let them pick which ones they felt needed improvement within that area. And then we just put the top three here. I've got more detail, but it's just to kind of summarize, here's the biggies. I also, if I made the box in red, if this was a touch point that had a much higher level of need for improvement than average. So you can see, as we start the journey and we go to the right and we curve around to the left, all these boxes are red up until the provider's bedside manner, then it turns green. That's what I was alluding to earlier, that they've got half a dozen contact points that they think need a lot of improvement before they even see the doctor. This is why a quarter of people are saying, service has gotten so bad that I'm kind of considering switching. They're loaded for bear before they even see the doctor, and the doctor has no idea that they have had these experiences. So again, you can dig a little deeper at your leisure. We could spend the whole hour really picking this apart and looking at it. There's a lot of meat in here in this section for you. But you
So,
can see
Rob,
that, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we've been carrying this flag for years with our company. And the thing is, if you look at a lot of those red boxes are before they've committed to becoming a patient. So it's like if you're looking to get patients and that's the most frustrating part of their journey, that's a problem. So, and then, the part of the healthcare consumerism, going back to what you said a moment ago, is there's a tendency in healthcare to think it's just that little green box. It's about the doctor. And it's like, that's a relatively small part of the entire experience. And so I love this slide. This is my favorite of
We're
the
hanging our hat on one element that is no longer, especially for younger people, this is no longer the box that can save you. Yeah. And then, the maximum time to be seen and to get lab results, 2 days. Think about it. If someone is sick, especially if it's serious, and we take weeks to get lab results, their life kind of stops while they're waiting. So they don't understand why we can't get lab results immediately. It's like in banking when they'd say, oh, you put your check in, it's going to take 7 days to clear. We all know now that it takes 7 seconds because it's automated. They're using the money for flow. So at least be honest with us and say why it's taking this longer time to get cleared. So keep us posted. It's going to take 2 days. Here's why. Now with the mandate that as soon as the results are available, they have to go into MyChart, even if the doctor hasn't seen them. A lot of our clients are scrambling with how do we communicate that with people so they don't panic before the doctor has seen it. We legally have to let them have access to it even before the doctor sees it, but we need to manage the expectations for people that go in and maybe the results weren't good. Maybe they're misinterpretable. Maybe they're borderline. So how do we communicate with that? But people want answers now. Women want to be seen quicker than men. Remember, they are the household CEO. 70% of the time, they're the healthcare decision maker for the household. So they feel rushed. So what do we do to help them really that we understand and we know they have busy lives, they're juggling everything. What can we do to help them get the information they need as quickly and efficiently as possible? Overall satisfaction, yeah, pretty much it was very good, but it wasn't exceptional. And if people have a PCP, they're significantly more likely to be happy. So, and again, that doesn't have to be a primary care physician, but having a quarterback helps people feel connected to your brand. And look at the satisfaction declines significantly with younger folks, and it goes up as people age. So these younger Gen Z, they're just not that feeling that great about their experience because we're trying to give them a one size fits all. How do we customize a routine or primary care or sick care visit by age? How do we offer different things so younger people go the virtual route, older people go the in-person route, just as a real quick example, but one size doesn't fit all, especially with primary care. We have to look at things by sex and age. Those are the two biggest targeting variables on the type of care that someone wants to receive. And we can't just have a one size fits all anymore. That just doesn't work. Pricing and billing, I call them my trouble bookend children. I've done so much research on this. A quarter of people price shopped. And if they do price shop, almost 6 in 10 are going to pick the lowest option. Here's recently someone said in a focus group meeting, and I'm going to paraphrase their words here. So my doctor says I need to get an MRI, and I want to price shop where to go. The hospital that he's part of, the MRI was, and I can't remember what they said, let's say $1,600. But then their outpatient center, the MRI was only, let's say, 800. What are they trying to pull on me? So the person hasn't even had their visit with you and they don't trust you. And I know we have legitimate reasons why it's more expensive at a hospital, Consumers are saying, I don't care. You want to be a system, you need to have single pricing. It shouldn't matter where I access you. So we have got to figure out how to have single pricing if we truly want people to think we are a system before they even use us. And, you know, they want to pay their bill online because they do that with so many other categories. And we make it hard for them to pay online. In fact, as Stuart alluded to earlier with my website research that we do on experience, that bill paying is one of the biggest pain points that people have. They're like, you're forcing me to pay online and you make it impossible. What's wrong with you? So they don't trust us when it comes to the bill. Here's the kicker. Most people want a single bill and they want it within 1 month of delivery or they shouldn't have to pay it. How's that for the new consumer? Think about that. Consumers in focus groups have been saying to me, I'm tired of being their accounting department. I know they have people they have to pay that aren't part of them. I don't care. That's their problem. Send me one bill and you figure out how to pay these other people. And if you can't give it to me in a month, I shouldn't have to pay it. You know, I've done hundreds and hundreds of focus groups over the past 20 years, and I try to remember interesting things that people say. One sticks with me in particular. It was about 5-6 years ago, and I will never forget it. So I want to share it with you. This summarizes everything I've been saying about billing. I was doing it about experience, and this woman's sitting to my right next to me, and she's just waxing poetic about the amazing experience she had with this health system. And I can feel the warm fuzzy, the clients behind the mirror, I bet they're like high-fiving. And then the bomb drops. She says, and then I got the bill. Then she proceeds to say, I thought I got all my bills for this procedure. And then 6 months later, I'm planning our family budget because we're on a limited budget. So I have to plan. And I saved enough money so we could have a family vacation. Then I get another bill from these people. You know, someone's mad when they say these people. That's very derogatory. So her tone turned dramatically. And she says, I dug into it and I found out I did owe this bill. They just never sent it to me. And she said, so I had to pay it and I had to cancel our family vacation. Then she turns to me and says, and now I hate them. I will never forget the emotional reaction and her facial expression and literally sticking a finger in my face. So we need to understand that as we are working on billing, that we could be ruining someone's family vacation because most people are on a budget. So if we take our sweet time and get a bill out 6 months later because, oh, we had to wait for the insurers, consumers are like, I don't care. You're the good parent. They're the bad parent. I expect that behavior from a health plan, but I don't expect it from you, my provider, because you're the good parent. And that's how they talk about us. Providers, you're the good parent. Insurers are the bad parent. And they're the children. They don't like getting stuck in between mommy and daddy fighting. That's the type of language and the reaction they have when we get into spats or we have problems with our insurers. They expect us to do the right thing and fix it. So that's a big responsibility for us, but it's a critical one. If we want to be their preferred brand, these are the types of things we have to do. And it has nothing to do with getting them healthy. Getting a bill figured out right away, that's a business thing. That's a brand relationship. And it just shows you, if they have the most amazing experience, but you blow it with the bill, you undo everything. So if we don't fix upfront pricing and back-end billing, trying to fix the patient journey is a waste of time. And I know that's a big statement to make, but it's true. These are difficult asks, but that's what consumers are expecting from us to do. And then lastly here, I have some points to ponder. You know what? These are going to be sent to you. I've just verbally said every one of these, so I'm not going to sit here and read this to you. I always hate when people read slides to me. So this is more for you to take away and digest. And as I said, Stuart, I'll make sure you've got the full report that has a lot more detail on the journey mapping. And so everybody can take the time to digest it. And as always, that's my contact info if you want to chat more. And there's Stuart's. So Stuart, I think we've got some time to do a little Q&A. If there's any more questions, I would love to address them.
Well done, Rob. That was excellent as always. And I think just one of the comments that I've held back on is you mentioned urgent care earlier and the OB-GYN side of the business where they're looking at the hospitals are looking at, is this making any money? And I can think of another department like that where one of our clients is a health system and the doctors are looking at it in terms of like, why are we doing urgent care anyway? It's like it's a loss leader, or it's not a loss leader. It's a loss, loses this money. We should just do other stuff. Like, but you're trying to be relevant to your community. That's where the community comes. It's like having that kind of marketing viewpoint of everything we do to look back and with reality check. Like, it's not just about how we feel. It's about how they feel. It's about how we're serving the community. What the experience is like once we're inside. As opposed to making it efficient for ourselves. And that's the challenge with healthcare, because that people do hold providers, health, systems, hospitals, multi-location groups, et cetera, at a much higher standard. And so I think that everything you talk about is perfect. And the consumerism is really, really important. So we have a couple of questions here. One was, since you have to switch back to slide 20, because I'm not sure what it's referring to, it says that, do the
All right,
metrics
I'll go back to slide 20.
refer to PCP correlate with employment rates, meaning is if unemployment goes up, does PC visits go down?
If unemployment goes up, was it, what did you
Yes.
say?
Yeah, it says,
Oh,
yeah.
that's a really good question. And I mean, now we're talking about the social determinants of health. And I haven't asked that question, but all the data I've seen and conversations I've had with clients, absolutely. As people are struggling financially, one of the first things to give is taking care of myself. Whereas before I'd go to a doctor or have a doctor, I might not have as good insurance. I might not have insurance. And so I'll just take Tylenol or I'll take Dayquil and try to get through what I'm experiencing. So absolutely, I think social determinants of health are massive. And I don't think we give enough attention to that. But absolutely, as unemployment goes up, I think taking care of ourselves with the basics, primary care, sick care, I think that goes down. I've heard it in focus groups. I just did some groups last year with a lot of single moms, and they're like, I can barely afford to get care for my kids. I'm putting myself last. So when I go into the doctor, I'm sick as a dog, and I just can't take it anymore, and I'll figure out how to pay for it. So we don't realize after COVID how many people are hurting financially. And a lot of people, here's another thing that's sorry, Stuart, but I think this is important too from a financial, is that when it comes from affordability, so many people are now on hourly wages. They have to clock out when they go to the doctor's office. So we think of costs as deductibles, co-pays, things like that. They also think about, oh, I had to clock out of work to come to this sick visit because I still had to go to work because I can't afford to be sick, but you made me wait an hour. So now I just lost 2 or 3 hours of work that I'll never get back. So not only did you cost me a $10 copay, let's say, but I just lost 3 hours of hourly wage, let's say making 15. So this visit just cost me $10 copay and I lost $45 that I had to clock out of our hourly wage. So this was a $55 visit. We don't equate it that way. We look at, oh, your cost is $10. Time is the new currency, literally and figuratively. So we have to look at it that way, that the more we make people wait, it's hurting them in a lot of ways we aren't thinking about.
By the way, going back to the cost, you said earlier about that a hospital bill, unexpected bill could ruin a vacation. It could ruin a life, depending on the bill, right? These stakes are high. So it's important to remember how this actually impacts real people. One of the questions was, and I'm not sure what it means, so we'll do the best we can. It says, do you think that there's an element of, well, I can take a COVID test at home, but not flu RSV test? So I didn't notice that question until later. It is an interesting fact. Like, and maybe Rob, you might have just a comment on this broad topic, because I literally went through this process where we were sick, but we didn't think we had COVID. It turned out we didn't. We didn't. I thought, well, of course we can find out if it's a flu test, and they didn't offer it at CVS or under our urgent care. So I guess maybe broadly, because you probably don't have data on that, but just broadly, how do you feel consumers think about these kinds of things, testing at home or testing for flu or for COVID? Is there any insights from your recent research that would cover that?
Yeah, I haven't. I was doing so much COVID research during the height of it. I kind of people were getting sick of talking about it, and I think we feel like let's stop talking about it and it'll go away. But it's kind of like that nagging pain that just won't quit. And so I don't have direct results. I do think that one thing COVID has taught us is we can innovate and we can do a lot more testing at home. So I think expectations are changing. Like, why can't I have a flu test at home? Why can't I do this test at home? So I think it's incumbent upon us to continue making tests that are consumer friendly, that don't require. Now that's a change up. Physicians are going to say, hey, I need these people to come in for volume. But then they're like, but I'm 2 weeks out, I'm so booked up. So how we manage this change of what requires an in-person versus what you can do at home, I think that's changing quite a bit. I think
Yeah.
what the test is, that's up for debate.
Well, it's a tons of, well, we don't have time to go into this, but there's tons of disruptors out there, including some of our clients that are doing exactly that, either bringing home visits or urgent care or telehealth or remote system monitoring or, and even for very specific niche areas, like we have one for cardiac rehab monitoring. So we have different niches that are evolving very, very quickly out there. One last question, because I know we both have to run to the next thing, as well as I'm sure a lot of our guests on the webinar. If someone removed the social de determinants of health barriers, wouldn't that lower the overall cost of healthcare, freeing up monies for prevention? So I'm not sure how to answer that, but perhaps you are.
Well, if I interpret it correctly, I like where they're going. To me, what I'm hearing is that if we can help people to have access to things like everyone else does, that there are no things like, well, my health is worse because
Yeah.
you can't keep a job, or I struggle with having a home, or mental stress can cause a lot of physical issues that people with means just don't experience.
Yeah, I
And
agree.
so I agree. I think we would actually reduce the amount of people that have to come in for care if we could help them to live a healthier life. That's why a lot of safety net hospitals, when a person, this is an extreme example, but I had it with a client, a woman comes in with a broken arm. Well, you can fix the broken arm, but they spent more time finding out why she had the broken arm. Turns out she was beat up by her husband. So how can that provider help her get to a healthy place so that she doesn't have to come in for things like that? I know that's an extreme example, but why don't we offer financial consulting? Why don't we have more emotional consulting, work more closely with AA or with drug clinics? Because mental health is one of the biggest causes of homelessness. And
Yep.
so why don't we work outside our comfort zone to help people to heal the whole person? A lot of our more, Catholic or faith-filled clients say, we heal the whole person. Do we really?
Good point. One last comment, and we'll two quick comments. Yes, there'll be a recording. Again, we'll send an email out that has that. And we don't post all of the slide decks. This one we will. So that'll be on our webpage as well. The other thing is just on the social determinants of health part. That's a big topic. I talk with a lot of my doctor friends. For example, asthma, the kids in the emergency room every other week, and they have, cats at home and dogs at home and dusty places to live. There's ways of being more effective for sure. Rob, as always, it was fantastic and fun talking to you. We'll have a expensive dinner with a cocktail or two sometime the next month or two. Next time I'm out, we'll try to make it work. By the way, Rob and I got to do Halloween together this last time. He has a fun community he lives in. So anyway, it was awesome having you, Rob, as always. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you, our guest, again. And Rob, we'll have some fun together in a few weeks. So
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.